Our lecturer today is Thomas A. McLean. Mr. McLean is a lifelong Christian Scientist who has been in the public practice of Christian Science since 1950. He has been a member of the Christian Science Board of Lectureship since 1962 and served for a number of years as its manager. In his lecture entitled, Why Spiritual Healing?, Mr. McLean will explore the deeper truths which lay behind the healings and the method used by Christ Jesus and practiced in Christian Science. And now let's welcome Mr. McLean.
Opportunity of exploring the question of spiritual healing, and I would like to begin by relating it to something that is also being given a great deal of thought these days, and that's the question of the quality of life. I'm sure you're aware of how people's interest in this subject has increased in recent years. The fight against pollution of the air, the water, the food we eat is only a ripple in the sea of the sudden urge we feel to improve our lives. Maybe it's not so sudden. If we consider that the whole of human history reflects this desire, but what may be new is the focus of it on quality rather than quantity. The urge to have more, the bigger is better syndrome underlying our culture shows signs of erosion. It may be premature to declare the end of wanting more for its own sake, but there are indications that thought is turning in a new direction. Even the phrase, the quality of life, has become a kind of byword. It crops up in current articles and conversations about personal as well as national goals. It's a very hopeful sign. It could lead us into a whole new way of life with different values and different aims. Perhaps it's not too much to say it could heal the world's ills. There's a reason for this. The turning of thought away from quantitative to qualitative measurements of life indicates a human response to spiritual needs. It's closely linked to the real purpose of human existence and the need to improve it. Based on spiritual values, the desire to live a better life is a regenerating force. It's a healing power that improves the quality of the life it touches. Now, the quality of something is simply the thing that makes it what it is. In determining the quality of human life, the role of spiritual healing is to make it better through the power of God. It's the God-provided means that human existence reaches a higher level. The level of spiritual being, of life in and of God. What we're talking about here is a discipline. It's a kind of control that spiritual healing brings to our life. More than a way to solve human problems, it's the key to a better life. I want to use an illustration here that may seem rather mundane, but it helps explain how spiritual healing works to improve the quality of our life. I want you to think about a quality control program, how it works in a modern manufacturing plant. Now, in every quality control program, there has to be a criteria of quality and some way of measuring it during the production process. And the workers, they have to think about quality. Everyone in the line of production must be quality-minded to achieve the best results. Under ideal conditions, the volume of production, in other words, quantitative standards, will be secondary to the standards for quality. The criteria of quality will control the volume of production. It'll act as a law to the entire manufacturing process. And in the marketplace, it's the standard of quality that makes the product better and worth more to the consumer. Now, in a somewhat similar way, spiritual healing works like a quality control program in our life. The criteria it brings to human existence is God's law, the law of spiritual being. Human life is improved when elements of thought and action which produce our experience are brought under this law. Quantitative standards, in other words, how much we have, become secondary to the standards for quality, the qualities of true being that this brings into expression. And of course, the marketplace, well, that's our daily life. Here's where quality really counts. If our life has been brought under God's law, the criteria of spiritual healing, it'll be better, and it'll have a higher value both to ourselves and to others. In order to see just how this works, we need to examine the method of spiritual healing, what it means, how it operates, and its effects. What are the effects of spiritual healing in our life? This will answer the question, why spiritual healing? It'll show that there's a deeper demand lying under the surface of every need of healing. Oh, it's a human need, but the demand underlying it is spiritual. And it's this demand that forms the reason for spiritual healing. A simple definition of healing, the way most people look at it, might be something like this: making well what is unwell. The fabric of human life seems marred by imperfection, by things unwell. Sick bodies appear alongside sick businesses. Ill minds fail to produce harmonious or successful human endeavors. The whole world is said to be suffering from a sick economy. Healing is needed to improve on all the conditions of human existence, to make what is unwell well. Now, there are many remedies. Even in what is generally accepted as spiritual healing, there are a number of different methods. What we mean by spiritual healing is healing by the law of God. It's the result of prayer in the way Jesus taught. It's the action of the divine mind or God felt at the level of human existence. In making a distinction between material and spiritual methods of healing, it might seem enough simply to say that spiritual healing employs the power of God or prayer, and material methods don't. Or that spiritual healing is concerned primarily with spiritual life, while material methods are directed to human needs. But of course, this isn't true. Material methods of healing aren't necessarily void of spiritual elements such as prayer, faith, and spiritual healing certainly doesn't ignore the human need. To replace sickness with health is the aim of all healings. The difference lies in the target and in the means we use to reach it. Let me be more specific. Suppose an unwell condition, say, a bodily illness. If in healing it, we regard the body itself as the target, our efforts are based on matter. We want this healing to change a physical condition, to change matter, to increase it or decrease it, speed it up or slow it down, get rid of it or restore it. Now, regardless of whether we employ drugs, surgery, or some form of psychosomatic medicine, the method is material. It's confined to the level of materiality, and it's governed entirely by quantitative measurements. On the other hand, if we see beyond this human need a spiritual demand, our target is different. What we seek isn't primarily a change in the body, but a change in human consciousness that lifts us above the body, above the level of physical discourse. This is healing in Christ's way. This method of healing is governed by qualitative values because it works by bringing the qualities of God into our life. This is healing by the law of God. And here's where we come to the real meaning of it. We know that wherever there is law, there's a demand to respond to it or act in accord with it. Spiritual healing embodies a demand. It requires a response. Even a material method of healing works according to what is presumed to be a physical law. We respond to it by our belief in it. Spiritual healing impels a response to divine demands through understanding, not belief. These demands are firmly anchored in Jesus' teachings, especially in the way he taught men to love and worship God. You see, there's a vital link between the need of healing and our worship of God. You might think of it this way. Every time you feel the human need of healing, your worship of God is being challenged. Mary Baker Eddy, the discoverer and founder of Christian Science, opens up this question, writing in her book Science and Health, The Key to the Scriptures. This is in a chapter entitled Science, Theology, Medicine, that she makes this observation. The theology of Christian Science includes healing the sick. The theology of Christian Science, not just its practice, includes healing the sick. Our Master's first article of faith propounded to his students was healing, and he proved his faith by his works. Then she asked, why has this element of Christianity been lost? Because our systems of religion are governed, more or less, by our systems of medicine. The point is, our choice of medicine tends to govern our religion. It determines what we worship. Jesus established a divine science of healing based on the worship of God as spirit, looking to matter to material methods of healing is a form of idolatry that departs from true worship. Christianity loses a vital element. It loses the purpose of Jesus' ministry in our whole salvation. In other words, the salvation Jesus promised requires the healing method he employed. It's really just that simple. It requires spiritual healing. This healing comes through our worship of God, and our worship of God is fulfilled through this healing. So you see, each supports and requires the other. The salvation that comes from God is the healing of all that's unlike God. It worships God by revealing the truth of His allness. I'm sure you'll agree that there's more involved here than simply the human hope that God will correct a bodily disorder. This human hope has no more power to heal than faith in drugs. The faith that heals is a deep spiritual conviction that God is the only life, and a love of this life that purifies our own daily living. This is the highest expression of our worship of God. It's true baptism. Baptism, you know, is that spiritual awakening to life in God that bathes human consciousness in a new life. This baptism lies at the base of every effort to improve the human condition or make it well through spiritual means. I have a friend who suffered for some 16 years with a goiter she'd been told was incurable. In order to contain the growth, she took daily medication. Stopping the medication, even for a day or two, caused the protrusion to enlarge and other symptoms became aggravated. Now, she was completely healed through her own study and application of Christian Science, mainly by reading the book. It took 2 years. 2 years before she was able to let go of the daily medication. So you see, it wasn't just a willingness to rely on God or prayer or faith in it that healed her. It was a spiritual awakening, a baptism in spirit. This is a point where spiritual healing and Christian Science is often misunderstood. It isn't a question of belief or disbelief in certain modes of treatment. This woman had no reason to question the skill or dedication of the doctors who treated her. And even if a cure had been possible through medical treatment, it wouldn't have satisfied the spiritual demand. Turning to Christian Science was a response to this demand. It meant that she had to take a stand. She had to take a stand for complete reliance on God for her healing, for her very life. Now this realization came, this understanding came to her gradually, as the qualities of God were more fully expressed in her life. But you see, it wasn't a sudden decision, or simply an emotional rejection of material methods, such as if someone might say, well, I don't believe in doctors. The power that heals comes with our discernment of spiritual realities. It's the understanding of God and the transforming effect of this understanding in our own life. My friend experienced this transformation. It changed the standpoints of her life from a material sense of existence to a more spiritual understanding of her own being and relationships to God. And this is what brought the healing. The symptoms gradually disappeared and the growth simply dissolved. Speaking of this recently, she remarked that the turning point was her awakening to see God as life, as her own life. Now, you know, this is what spiritual healing really means. It means this baptism, this awakening to God as life that makes this life our home. Now, what about the operation of spiritual healing. What exactly makes it work? The late football coach Vince Lombardi once made the observation that the quality of a man's life is in direct proportion to his devotion to excellence. This is a pretty good thought. But let's carry it one step further. In its primary form, excellence is a spiritual quality. It's a spiritual perfection that is the primal condition of all true being. Seinfeld puts it this way. Perfection underlies reality. Without perfection, nothing is wholly real. But now, what is it that interprets spiritual perfection to human understanding? A man may devote his life to the ideal of excellence, but the measure of his achievement will rest on something higher than human effort. It'll call for the recognition of spiritual realities. It'll register a response to a higher power that voices the demands of spiritual perfection to human understanding. This higher power is the Christ, the divine idea of God. More than a name for Jesus, Christ is the power that lay behind his healing work. It doesn't belong to any man, yet it operates as a spiritual idea in all men. You will recall that Jesus once questioned his disciples concerning the opinions others held of him. He said, "Whom do men say that I, the Son of Man, am?" Well, the answers he got suggested that some people thought he was a spirit, or maybe the reincarnation of some earlier prophet. Well, this misconception of Jesus would have reduced his healing power to some form of mysticism coming out from the human mortal mind. Peter responded with a clear recognition of the divine idea. He said, "Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God." He saw in the human Jesus the divine idea of man's sonship with God. This understanding revealed the spiritual perfection, a healing power above the level of the human mind, above intellectual strivings. This is the Christ coming to human consciousness. It's the operation of spiritual healing, revealing God's allness and the unreality of whatever is unlike him. Christ is the power that awakens human thought to spiritual perfection. This power couldn't come from the human mind. It's the direct action of the divine mind for God. Now, this distinction between the divine mind and the human mind is important to our understanding of spiritual healing. And for this very same reason, it was an important part of the awakening that came to Mrs. Eddy. She'd been searching for years for the proof that all physical effects have a mental cause. And although she was a deeply religious person herself, the early years of this effort were centered in the hope that this causative power might be found in the human mind as an expression of human intellect, human knowledge. She explored one human system after another. Repeated disappointments and her own increasing illness finally exhausted her faith in all material methods. Then a remarkable thing occurred. She experienced the spiritual healing. This was the turning point in her search. It was the catalyst of a new discovery. It would be difficult to pinpoint the exact beginning of this discovery. For several years, Mrs. Eddy had been healing others by mental methods she herself didn't fully understand. It wasn't until she became willing to forsake her own intellectual strivings, the effort to trace healing effects to the human mind, that she awakened to the Christ power in spiritual healing. This was an awakening, a discovery, if you will, that God is mind, and that this divine mind governs all that is real. Her own healing, as she gradually came to see, wasn't the result of simply a change in thought, or what might be called today positive thinking. It couldn't even be explained on the basis of mind over matter, if we mean the human mind. Mrs. Eddy discovered a law that reveals the power of God to possess and control every idea, every element of true being. Consider the deeper implications of this discovery. Mrs. Eddy had devoted her life to finding the mental cause behind every effect, but she'd been looking for it in the human mortal mind. At this moment of healing, she caught a clear glimpse that God is the only mind, the only cause underlying every real effect. This discovery exposes the false basis, the unreality of so-called mortal mind and its effects. These effects, sin, disease, all the discords of human existence, are the product of our belief in the flesh. They are not real to God. The need of healing is the need to lift our life above the flesh. Look at the life of Christ Jesus, especially his resurrection. Here was proof of the power of the Christ to triumph over death that revealed the deep Christianity underlying human life. The transforming power of the Christ determines the quality of our life. It shows the measure of our own resurrection from the flesh. This may be something we don't think about very often. Certainly we are aware of the immense challenge Jesus faced and his loving sacrifice of self. But what does his resurrection really mean to us? How does it relate to our own life, our own need of healing right where we are? Well, Jesus' life purpose was to reveal the Christ as the real man, the true selfhood of all men. This same purpose underlies spiritual healing. Jesus faced every temptation, every reason to believe in the reality of life and matter. Yet he proved the power of the Christ to lift man above material conditions, out of all that is unreal to God. This was his example to us. Now, we've talked about the meaning of spiritual healing as through baptism or our worship of God. This was the first stage in Jesus' example. His baptism began with his birth, his appearance in the flesh as the Christ child. It continued throughout his life in his clear, consistent devotion to the things of God. But Jesus' love of God needed no ceremonial confirmation. It was fully proved in his resurrection. His example marks the way for us. Is a commitment to Christ that brings us to the threshold of spiritual youth. It's like coming to the beginning of a bridge that spans the distance between material existence and spiritual being, or life in God. Now, baptism doesn't take us over the bridge, but it brings us to the point where the Christ, or divine idea, touches the human condition. The question is, will we cross over the bridge? Will we accept the Christ way of life by proving it in our own life? This is our resurrection. It means the gradual putting off of a mortal, material sense of self, that false sense of self that makes material pursuits and material pleasures the aim of human existence. The movement of our life across this bridge of resurrection marks the second stage in Jesus' example. It joins our present sense of existence, where we are right now, with the reality of life in God. For the Master, the resurrection was a single culminating victory over death and the grave. For us, it's the daily spiritualization of thought and life that lifts us above the flesh. We should know that every instance, every single instance of spiritual healing compels a certain number of steps across this bridge of resurrection. Jesus' resurrection restored his human body to its normal condition. Certainly this was proof that whatever would attack man's life, sin, disease, even death, will be overruled by the Christ. This proof repeats itself in every healing, marking our progress, our resurrection from the flesh. This is the operation of spiritual healing in our life. Now, we want to talk about its effects, but, you know, I think this might be a good time to tell you a story. You know, there's a theory that in this television age in which we live, the human mind has become conditioned to work best in time segments, in short periods of time, perhaps not exceeding 20 minutes. Our attention span may be geared to the station break. Well, we've gone over 20 minutes here, but I'm sure you people are above average in the ability to stay with an idea. However, this story I want to tell you concerns the young attorney who erred in this particular respect. Well, he was fresh out of law school and filled with academic erudition. He was trying his first case in court, and he was arguing the case before the judge, leading the judge through a very complicated maze of legal theory and doctrine and precedents and so on. But he would punctuate his presentation every few moments by asking, "Judge, are you following me?" Well, after about the third such query, the old judge replied, "Yes, young man, I'm following you, but if I was certain I could find my way back, I'd leave you right here. Well, I certainly hope that nothing like this thought has crossed the mind of any of you folks here this morning. I think it was Job who said that there's a spirit in man, and the inspiration of the Almighty giveth him understanding. Well, certainly it's this spirit in us that we're looking to for the understanding we would have of this subject. All the logic in the world can't match that moment of inspiration when we grasp the meaning of a spiritual idea. And you know, grasping the meaning of spiritual ideas is one way to describe the effects of spiritual healing in our life. Everybody faces the same need to learn that God is life, that life and intelligence aren't in matter, but not everybody employs spiritual healing to achieve this end. As a matter of fact, many people who investigate this healing method look for its effects in the wrong direction. They compare spiritual healing with other methods solely on the basis of its effects on the physical condition. Well, perhaps this might seem natural enough if we're thinking of healing simply as the means of making something well. But once we realize that the need to be well is the need for a spiritual wholeness, we look for a different remedy to our ills, and we measure its effect by a different yardstick. We might call it the yardstick of regeneration. Jesus spoke of it as being born again. As an illustration of being born again, I want to tell you about the healing of a birth defect of a small child. But first, it might be helpful to consider why we face this need. Why is regeneration, being born again, necessary? And is it linked in some way to the ills we contract? Well, you know, this is sort of like asking, if God makes man spiritual, why do we appear material? And the ills of the flesh, where do they come from? Who creates them? You see, the answer to all these questions lies in the understanding of spiritual wholeness as the condition of man's true being. It simply means that he's wholly spiritual. That God doesn't create a mixture of the spiritual and the material. If the spiritual is real, the material is unreal. It's an inversion of spiritual reality. Let's call this inversion the suppositional opposite of truth. The suppositional opposite of truth. You see, this helps explain the unreality of this material sense of existence that seems so very real to us. To begin with, whatever is the opposite of truth would have to be suppositional. Otherwise, it would be truth and not its opposite. Think along with me in this way. If you affirm a truth, and then you simply suppose its opposite to be true, you're creating an inversion of truth. You're giving birth to its suppositional opposite. As an illustration, you get up in the morning, you go to the window, you raise the blind, and you look out on, like today perhaps, on a beautiful spring morning. You may say, well, my, today is going to be a warm, sunshiny day. What if you didn't get up and check? What if you stayed in bed all day because you had heard on the 10 o'clock news the night before that tomorrow is going to be a cold and rainy day? This would be your day. For all practical effects, you would spend a cold and rainy day in bed. And it wouldn't make very much difference whether the false supposition came out of your own imaginings or you got it off the 10 o'clock news. It's your acceptance of it that makes it real to you. Now, the appearance of life, of substance, of intelligence in matter is an inversion of spiritual reality. It's the suppositional opposite of life. We opposition a seeming reality, a false sense. But to mortal mind, the mentality that believes it, very real and certainly very substantial. The fact is, this supposite of truth is the source and content of everything we see in our life that's unlike God. Right now, whatever you may see in your life that's unlike God has its source, its substance, it belongs to this suppositional opposite of truth. It's good. Now, just as we see that for every truth, there's a suppositional error, so for every error, there's an opposite truth. This truth is a spiritual idea. A spiritual idea. Regeneration is simply what happens in your life when spiritual ideas encounter material beliefs, suppositional errors. Now, this encounter doesn't wipe out what we see as material or destroy normal manifestations of being. It restores them. Regeneration turns the inversion around. What appears in belief to be material is revealed to spiritual understanding as an idea of God. And as an idea of God, it embodies and expresses a divine perfection. This points to the necessity of regeneration. This is why we need to be born again. We need to know and experience spiritual ideas as the substance, the reality of our own true being. Regeneration is needed in mortal mind. The physical change, or what we call a healing, is the effect of regeneration. It's the perfection of the spiritual idea showing through our present sense of existence. And you see, the more imbued we are with the spiritual idea, the more we live it and love it, the more its perfection is manifested in our life. Now about the healing of the birth defect. This little girl was born without a hip socket on one side of her body. A series of x-rays and physical examination by several orthopedic surgeons shortly after birth, confirmed this condition. The remedy proposed by the doctors was to have the baby fitted with a special brace. They explained that if this brace were worn continually for perhaps 2 to 3 years, it might be possible at that time to insert an artificial socket into the hip joint. the parents of this little girl were Christian Scientists. They weren't opposed to the remedial program offered by the doctors, but they saw a deeper need. They saw the need for regeneration that would reveal this child's true perfection and wholeness. You see, they couldn't accept the supposition of imperfection, malformation, incompleteness as belonging to God's creation. This was their need to be reborn, to see this birth as the appearing of a spiritual idea. Well, the brace was never worn. Instead, a Christian Science practitioner was called, and daily metaphysical treatment was begun. Perhaps it would appear that the challenge in this case was to produce through prayer what normal prenatal development had failed to produce. But Christian Science treatment doesn't work this way. This treatment works on the basis of the allness of God and the unreality of matter. What it produces is an awakening in mortal mind. Suppositional errors lodged in this mind are reversed and corrected. Regeneration takes place. These parents worked closely with an article by Mrs. Eddy entitled The New Birth, in which there is an explanation of both human and divine generation. Here's what it says about human birth. A material or human birth is the appearing of a mortal, not the immortal man. This birth is more or less prolonged and painful according to the timely or untimely circumstances, the normal or abnormal material conditions attending it. Well, this is simply a statement of the human law or belief of generation that this child had come under, and the resulting condition certainly wasn't normal. But then it goes on to speak of the effects of regeneration, the new birth. With the spiritual birth, man's primitive, sinless, spiritual existence dawns on human thought. You see, the Christ coming to human consciousness. Spiritual existence dawns on human thought. Through the travail of mortal mind, hope deferred, the perishing pleasure and accumulating pains of sense, by which one loses himself as matter and gains a truer sense of spirit and spiritual man. Well, these parents went through the travail of mortal mind in facing the fear that their child might never walk. They saw human hope deferred in the demand for a higher trust, a deeper love for God as the Father and Mother of all. They had to deny and reject every suggestion of life and intelligence in matter, until they gained a clear conviction of life in God. God is all. He includes all life, all truth, all substance, all reality. These parents knew that in this reality, their child existed as a perfect idea of God. There couldn't be any birth defect in this idea. No flaw in the conception of this child in the divine mind. These were the truths that they and the practitioner worked with over many, many months until they were convinced that the healing was complete and they could see the normal development taking place in the child. They saw no need at this point for further physical examination to confirm this healing. However, the hospital authorities, feeling a deep concern, perhaps responsibility for the child, prevailed upon the parents to allow fresh x-rays to be taken. These x-rays clearly showed the formation of a perfectly normal hip socket. Today, this child is 8, 9 years old, enjoying perfect coordination and strength. It's been a complete and permanent healing. Now, this is a case of reversing the testimony of the physical senses. It illustrates spiritual healing as the effect of seeing the perfect idea of God instead of a defective material formation. This is the power of a spiritual idea. It has the power to reverse its own suppositional opposite, to reveal the reality, the perfection of true being in God. Spiritual healing begins with our worship of God. It operates to restore the human condition, and its effects are seen in the elevation of life above material standpoint. This elevation of life above matter was illustrated in the final stage of Jesus' example to us, in his ascension above all material conditions. Why did he heal? What was Jesus doing when he healed? He said, the Son can do nothing of himself, but what he seeth the Father do. For what things soever he doeth, these doeth the Son likewise. Well, now, this statement clearly rejects any action or power in man apart from God. Yet it states just as clearly that through divine sonship, man will do whatever he sees the Father do. The quality of Jesus' life and his entire healing ministry were determined on this basis. Seeing what the Father doeth and doing likewise. No individual ever has or ever will heal a single ill. But any individual claiming, understanding his divine sonship, may see what God is doing. It isn't human action. God isn't moving people and things about as if the universe were a huge chessboard. God's doing is the appearing of spiritual ideas in the vestibule of human understanding. Man doing likewise is the reflection, the expression of spiritual ideas understood. You and I may see what God is doing the moment we awaken to our own need of this baptism in spirit. We'll see the operation of spiritual healing in our own resurrection from the flesh. We'll feel its effect in the elevation of life above material standpoint to the reality of our own being in God. This is the why of spiritual healing. This is how it improves the quality of our life. It's what spiritual healing is all about. Thank you very much.